This episode sponsored by Healthy Cell. Healthy Cell is different than typical supplements because it's a gel, not pills. Healthy Cell uses microgel technology, which is clinically proven to absorb 165% better than traditional pills. That means your body actually uses the nutrients, so you can feel the difference. And instead of swallowing a handful of vitamins, one great-tasting gel pack can replace up to 18 pills. Healthy Cell formulas are created by physicians and nutritionists to support energy, focus, immune health, and overall wellness. If you're going to take vitamins, they should actually work. Healthy Cell. Reach your potential.
And we are back with another episode of the Kyle Anzalone Show. And I am very happy today to be joined by investigative journalist Richard Medhurst. Richard, how are you doing today?
Hi, Kyle. I'm great. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Doing well. Happy to have you here. Just, you know, because you're new to the show, I've been following your work when you start, you know, really doing a lot around Assange. And of course, I've followed you as you've covered the genocide in Gaza and the U.S. Ongoing war in the Middle East. And your work has put you under the investigation, the you know, target hairs of some of these European governments. So what exactly is your legal situation now? Are you kind of free to travel to the UK and around Europe, or are they still investigating you again for what I think is some very brave work? And the fact that they are investigating you at this point in time is almost an endorsement of what you're doing.
Yeah, so I'm free to travel as far as I know. No one's told me anything, but basically there are two cases, which are kind of like one case because they're both accusing me of being a terrorist because of journalism, which is, you know, insane. So one was in the UK and one in Austria. And the UK one is closed, but they only closed it because they handed it over to Austria because they want Austria to continue it, right? So like, it's not because they did it because they're apologizing or because they think they did anything wrong. And they kept me, I was on bail for like over a year. So from August 2024 until recently. So like over a year on bail. There's still a case open in Austria. They're still investigating me. That's also been going on for more than a year now. And just to be clear, I haven't been charged in either country with a crime, right? So the goal is like to keep you under investigation. And of course, like the initial harassment of just like, you know, arresting me, putting me in jail, detaining me, raiding me, all of it, right? And then of course they just like leave that hanging over your head. So yeah, for now, the case is still open in Austria. And again, it's the same thing. It's like your work equals terrorism. There's nothing to it. It's like literally that, like they're criminalizing even if you like read the what they're saying, it criminalizes any academic work, right? Like for example, if you're, just because you have a logo, you're a journalist commenting on a document that has a logo they don't like, they're holding me responsible for a document. Like, it's like you have a history professor who's showing you, you know, a document from World War II, and then you say that you're a member of the SS. I mean, this is madness. It completely, you know, trampling on free speech, on any form of intellectual activity, academia. It's really criminalizing journalism, like in the literal sense. It's not just saying that to make it sound like, oh, it's a serious threat to press freedom. It's literally criminalizing it. And like I said, it happened in both countries.
And I'm just wondering, what is the kind of state of journalism in the UK? I followed a little bit more closely than your situation, Craig Murray, who I believe actually ended up in jail for a short period of time, a month or two, because of his persecution. Can somebody, you know, go to the UK and report on particularly the situation in Gaza without, you know, having to toe the line when it comes to Israel or face prosecution?
Well, no, I mean, you can't. It's just like, there's no way to say it differently. If you don't support Israel, you will, and you're like on their radar because you're effective as a politician or as a journalist or as an activist, any whatever you do. I mean, they're even targeting doctors, so it's not like it's restricted to one field of the economy. If you're on the radar because you've made enough noise and you've been effective at raising awareness or just speaking about this topic, they'll come after you. They'll come after you for sure. It's a fact. And with Craig, I know Craig well. He's a good friend. So they went after him. They detained him at the airport once. And then he was also in jail in Scotland, as you pointed out. Those weren't in relation directly to like, this was before the genocide in Gaza, but it's still the same people in power harassing Craig because, you know, he's close to WikiLeaks and because of the work that he's done, and he's a whistleblower as well. So, you know, but to answer your main question, can you talk about Gaza without being harassed by the government? No, you can't. You cannot. They will come after you at some point in one fashion or another.
And I think it's really important that as Americans, as American, most of my audience, that we take note of this because, you know, right now, I think most Americans, if we speak about Gaza, we're relatively safe. Now, that is definitely different if you're a green card holder or you're an immigrant. They're starting to really eat into the First Amendment here. And I think it's only going to accelerate to where, you know, the situation that you're facing in the UK. Now, Richard, I want to ask you, I watched a very fascinating video that you recently put out, basically laying out how the U.S. has become a pirate state. And I found this so compelling because as I've looked at how U.S. foreign policy has developed, particularly under Donald Trump, I thought that oftentimes his military actions were in contradiction with each other. If he really wanted to destroy Iran, end the war in Ukraine, lift the sanctions on Russian oil, and then it's going to be much easier to isolate the Iranian economy. Same thing with Venezuela. Rather than military action, just lift the sanctions, leave the government in power, let them produce as much oil as possible, and then, again, it's going to be easier to isolate Iran. But you paint this as a policy, a giant policy, all meant for the U.S. to really consolidate, I guess not, you know, be the only sole oil producer in the world, but really be the dominant oil gas producer in the world. So I know it's a half hour video, that's a lot to go through, but just kind of break down how all of these events are actually interrelated and part of the same policy.
This episode sponsored by HealthyCell. HealthyCell is different than typical supplements because it's a gel, not pills. HealthyCell uses microgel technology, which is clinically proven to absorb 165% better than traditional pills. That means your body actually uses the nutrients, so you can feel the difference. And instead of swallowing a handful of vitamins, one great-tasting gel pack can replace up to 18 pills. HealthyCell formulas are created by physicians and nutritionists to support energy, focus, immune health, and overall wellness. If you're going to take vitamins, they should actually work. Healthy Cell. Reach your potential.
Yeah, I know it's very tempting for all of us, you know, myself included, to just dismiss Trump as like some moron. And he is, you know, to an extent. But all of the actions that the US are undertaking in terms of foreign policy, there is a logic behind it, right? And it's very tempting for all of us to think, oh, well, the US are finished, you know, they're done. Look at them, they got humiliated in Iran. And I know, because I covered this like more than most people, like on a clinical, surgical level, I covered how they got humiliated, their radars destroyed. So it's not like, you know, I'm contradicting that. But military humiliation and military defeat are not the same thing as economic defeat. You can still be humiliated in Vietnam, right? And then come back 2 decades later to attack Iraq. And it's the same thing is happening here. As a matter of fact, the United States' entire military doctrine is built on never fighting wars at home. That's how they shield the industrial base and the population. And, you know, no one seems to understand this. And they keep engaging the US on their own soil. And then their economies are destroyed. And then the US just like keeps, you know, resurfacing. But in terms of the oil, the gas, yeah, look, for me, this is so abundantly clear. I just literally like half an hour ago, I released that documentary that you're talking about, the birth of the Petrogas dollar and the pirate state. I released a written version of it on Substack. And it's got even more stuff inside of it. it is abundantly clear to me, it is irrefutable that the United States is engaging in a takeover of the world's energy supply. Once you watch the film or you read the investigation, it's irrefutable. I mean, just in the last month, right, we just crossed over from April into May. This was the most violent month on in terms of attacks on Russian refineries. And this stuff doesn't even make the news, like even in independent media. No one even knows about this.
Right.
We're not just talking about like one or two tankers. It started with tankers. When I started writing the investigation, it was just tankers. And then it escalated to export hubs and to refineries. So they're literally striking at the source of Russia's energy infrastructure. And you know, people want to pretend like, oh, but you know, that's just propaganda and nothing. It's not going to hurt them. Dude, I looked at the OPEC report, okay? So it's literally based here in Vienna, OPEC. So I looked at the report. Russia, they've missed their quota by around 400,000 barrels. It's very serious, right? Like they have underproduced at certain moments in history on purpose, right? OPEC sometimes do that as a collective, or they'll just do that individually for one reason or another. But you don't underproduce by 400,000 barrels. And you can compare Russia's output to Saudi Arabia or other countries. It's really a massive gap. That doesn't just happen every day. And so you can see that the effects of these strikes, they're real. And I would also add that let's imagine hypothetically that they're not causing Russia any damage. Why would you allow someone to bomb your energy infrastructure, even if you have to go and repair it and you're able to repair it? That is still an attack on your sovereignty. It's still an act of war. There's no upside to this. It's very, very bad that the US is allowed to get away with this. And make no mistake, it is the US, because you can't expect me to believe that a Russian tanker is struck in the Arctic or in the Indian Ocean or in the Mediterranean, and it's just Ukraine. Ukraine is receiving help. They are officially claiming these attacks. But of course, they're doing it with help from Britain. They're doing it with help from the US and from NATO. So that's one side of this attempt, or not attempt, but just project to take over the world's oil and gas. Because, you know, it would be just an attempt if it was like still on a drawing on the drawing board. But they're actually succeeding. And part of the reason they're succeeding is because Russia and China aren't doing anything about it, which is, this is the only thing I can't figure out, right? Like, I figured out the entire strategy. I just can't figure out that last bit. I mean, I have some theories on why they're not doing anything, but really no one is standing in the US way. And if we look at China, you have a combination of things. The fact that Qatar's LNG was blown up, the Ras Laffan refinery, which is the same gas field that they share with Iran, right?
Yep.
So on March 18th, Israel claimed to have done that, right? Like as if the US were unaware. But so that caused a disruption to China. Because China get 20 to 30% of their LNG from Qatar. And that plus the fact that the US are bombing Iran, and even with the toll system, China are of course prioritized because they're a strategic partner. But just the fact that there's a war means that you're going to have chaos, and that's creating a backlog. So the damage to Qatar's LNG, which is permanent, it's going to be there for years. The fact that there's a war on in the region, and the fact that now on top of that you have an additional US blockade, which I predicted correctly would happen, that is creating a delay. And I went and I got the figures from China's, these are official government figures from China. You can literally see that the total volume of gas going into the country, and I put this in the investigation, has dropped. It's dropped compared to last month, and it's dropped compared to last year if you do year-on-year comparison. So, you know, we're talking about 10 to 16% drop. And that's the total volume of gas. And it's an educated guess that it's LNG, just because the rest of the gas is coming via pipeline from Russia. And there's no reason for that to have been cut. But there are also other investigations that have shown it's actually specifically LNG. Either way, you can see that these effects are real. So anyone who's pretending like this is, you know, it's just, oh, the US trying to hurt them. No, they are actually succeeding at hurting them. And this is really not good for anyone. and there's no upside to this. You know, pretending like it's not hurting Russia and China is like burying your head in the sand. This is really the political equivalent of that. China and Russia shouldn't be attacked. And they should also not just stand idly by and allow the United States to attack them. I mean, these are nuclear armed countries that we're talking about. You would think that there's a level of deterrence, but it's almost astonishing that you know, these attacks not being responded to, it's almost made nuclear weapons irrelevant. That's the kind of feeling that I went away with after this investigation. I was like, well, you know, Iran are really, if they really are making a nuclear weapon as the US claim, they're not. They're wasting your time. Yeah, anyone who's building a nuclear weapon is wasting your time if this is the reality, that the US is going to keep hitting your industrial base and you just do nothing about it. So just to zoom out again, so you've got China, basically their LNG has been cut off from via Qatar. Their oil has been cut off from Venezuela, from Russia and Iran. So that's 1/3 of their LNG and 1/3 of their oil, at the very least, disrupted and threatened, at the very least. But it's actually been cut to a certain extent, and that's not good. You know, if someone did that to the US, they would nuke them. So I think there's been a failure from Russia and China to establish a red line for these attacks. And really, this month was the most violent. Like, I put out in this investigation on Substack a chart. You can literally see the number of attacks on the Russian refineries. During the entire Ukraine war, you never had this many attacks on Russian refineries and tankers and export hubs. It really escalates after the Iran war begins. And that tells you that this is intentional. And it tells you that the United States have planned this as like a global pincer movement. So they took Venezuela. They took that heavy, thick sludge and secured like a second strategic reserve for themselves. And then they went after Russia. They went after Iran. And, you know, Nord Stream, now we're seeing the alternative being built. So Chevron in the last 4 months, it's quite amazing, right, how much Chevron get away with. In my opinion, who controls the US government? It's Chevron, make no mistake. So they've done 4 gas deals in the last 4 months. They did one with Syria, with Israel, with Greece, and with Cyprus. And of course, Syria is the new Al-Qaeda government that the US put there. So, you know, that ceasefire in Gaza was timed perfectly for these gas deals to start. Like, they didn't waste a second, right? Like, October, you have the ceasefire, the so-called ceasefire, which Israel doesn't abide by. And then the next month, they like, shoved the Board of Peace through the UN Security Council. And then immediately afterwards, in December, they're meeting with the Syrian al-Qaeda officials for the gas deal, and they signed the one with Israel. And then in February, you've got Greece, Syria signed, and just now in April, the Cypriot gas deal sign. So they have all this gas that are going to steal from Gaza and Syria, pump it through, on the way to Cyprus, pick up their gas as well, and then that continues in a pipeline through Greek waters into Europe. And it's literally symmetrical to Nord Stream. So they killed off Nord Stream, they cut Russia off, and now they're building the opposite American artery through the Mediterranean. It's really extraordinary. And this is all happening at the same time. All these attacks on Russia, China, Iran, the Chevron gas deals, it's so obvious what's going on. And, you know, Donald Trump isn't making any effort to hide it. They're in control of the world's oil and gas now.
So just a couple of, I guess, one point that I found very compelling in your video was that, you know, I think for Americans, a lot of us see this war as an economic negative. And that is true. You know, whenever I go fill up the tank on my car, it costs me 30-40% more than it did before the war already. But there are elements of the American government, the American economy, the gas industry, Chevron, who are doing very well. Yeah. That doesn't exist in the UK. That doesn't exist in Europe. The continent is heavily energy dependent on other states. And so one I guess, kind of question I had about your reporting is, when the Russian tanker gets hit in the Mediterranean Sea, obviously the Europeans know about that. At least publicly, the Europeans are complaining about Ukraine attacking the Russian, energy facilities, saying, you know, please stop that for this period of time. But yet you would assume that Europe actually does possess the leverage to force Ukraine to stop if they wanted to. So what is going on in European capitals that have them on board with this policy?
Well, I mean, they call themselves European officials, but they obviously work for the CIA or for Chevron. You know, take your pick. They're clearly not working for Europe, because anyone with half a brain would never even touch these deals with a barge pole, never mind sign them. You know, and we have to remember these gas deals I just talked about, the 4 Chevron deals. The EU laid the groundwork for that. They are, the whole goal is to supply the EU. Ursula von der Leyen, who is, I don't know who's more evil, her or Kallas, but, you know, they're basically running the EU on behalf of the US. She's the one who went to Israel in 2022. This is before the genocide, right? Let's say just a year or so before the genocide, right? Again, funny timing. And it's on video. She's saying we want to replace Russian gas. So the intention is very clear. It's that we want to suck the gas out of the shores of Gaza, of Palestine, Syria, Lebanon, and send that to Europe instead of Russia's gas. So they have no problem with blowing up this infrastructure. As a matter of fact, it's they are part of this plan. I frankly don't know what the, you know, if the US have dirt on them or if they're giving them kickbacks. I don't know the details of that. I don't think we'll ever find that out. But they are clearly serving US interests. And as a matter of fact, this is another thing that went massively underreported. Ursula von der Leyen went to visit Trump at his spot in Scotland, in Turnberry. And this is in August, right? And they signed the EU trade deal. And there was a pledge made to give the US another deal for energy, exclusively for US oil and gas, for worth $750 billion, okay? And that is going through now, right? And it's extraordinary how that is like actually the turning point where all these strikes begin on Russian tankers, you know, the whole campaign with Venezuela, Iran, everything starts after that Turnberry point. When she and I put the video of that, a clip of it in the film when she's in Scotland and they're shaking hands and doing all of this stuff. So, you know, I don't see any distinction between Donald Trump and Ursula von der Leyen. For me, they're playing on the same side. They're playing on Chevron's side. They are, you know, these people are corporatists. They don't really represent any one country or any geographical area. They are really just sales representatives for Chevron and ExxonMobil and Shell. And, you know, you mentioned paying extra at the pump in America. And it's very important to distinguish between, you know, the average Joe and Wall Street. Because for Wall Street, like, you're paying, you told me, like 30, 40% extra. That's being pocketed by U.S. corporations. So from their point of view, you're giving them their money, right? Which is all they want. But second of all, you're giving it to them in dollars. Massive win for the dollar. And third of all, it's staying inside of the U.S. So it's not going outside the U.S. economic circuit. It's in a closed loop, right? So that's constantly keeping the dollar afloat. And never mind the whole killing that they're making overseas. Like, I forgot to state the obvious, but this gas that they're going to suck out of the Mediterranean now and this alternative Poseidon pipeline that they've built to Nord Stream, that's worth $3 trillion. $3 trillion. So when you think of the money that Congress give Israel every year, which is 36 billion over 10 years?
3.8 billion a year, although yeah. Some years it's more.
That's pocket change compared to this. And why am I bringing up Israel? Because Israel are sort of the private guards, the mercenaries, for Chevron and for all these corporations. Because by destroying the region, and especially the ports, right? The only ports that work on this coast are Israeli. They basically held the door open for Chevron and for U.S. corporations whenever they are ready or whenever they're able to come, you know, and exploit and develop this gas. This gas is untouched, huh? Like people from the region have never been able to touch it. And Israel's basically acting as their private army. So when you consider or you compare what Congress give Israel every year, which people think is like, you know, Israel is running the U.S. No. The Levantine Basin alone is worth half a trillion. That alone. So when you add in the gas they're going to get from the Aphrodite field with Cyprus and the whole thing combined, $3 trillion. And this doesn't even make the news. I mean, it's to call it a heist is like an understatement.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was one interesting thing on the new map that Israel drew for Lebanon. The so-called yellow line extends out into the Mediterranean Sea. And what you know it, the entire gas field is now on the Israeli side of the border. So I did want to ask you about this. I'm always interested on, you know, kind of perspective from outside of the United States, because, you know, I think most people, even in the independent media community here, people who are against the war in Iran, see it as, you know, Donald Trump is responsible, not to take agency from the man, but it was Benjamin Netanyahu who came to the United States. Mossad and the CIA worked against the president to convince him that a nuclear enrichment program is equivalent to attempting to build a nuclear weapon. And so the U.S. had no choice but to go into Iran, or not no choice, but chose to go into Iran because of Netanyahu's influence. And you said all that aside, right?
Yeah, I mean, I know the nuclear issue like better than most because I've covered it here in Vienna for like the last 5 years on the ground. I know it backwards. Like, how much time do you have? Like, I can really go into detail on this issue.
I'm just wondering, do you think that the nuclear issue weighed into Trump's decision-making and Trump started the war in Iran had anything to do with Netanyahu and his trip to the U.S.?
No, look, this is optics. I know it's there's like this whole debate of who runs the other, right? Is it Israel controlling the US or the US controlling Israel? I mean, look, I think if you don't have to take my word for it, you can go look at what Nasrallah has said, what Khamenei have said. All of the leaders of the resistance, and not just the current ones or the contemporary ones, but even if you go back 5 decades and you look at the non-Muslim resistance or Islamic resistance, but you look at, for example, the secular PLO, all of them say the exact same thing. They all say that it's the United States running Israel and Israel is a proxy for the West, right? And Nasrallah actually specifically pointed out that it's the corporations, corporate America, right? And again, that might sound obvious to some people, but it's really necessary to point that out. And I went looking for clips of Nasrallah saying this a few weeks ago. And I found one from like 2007, 2013, 2022. Like my point is all across his career, his life, he maintained that consistent position that it's America running Israel. So, I mean, I'm sure. Like, don't get me wrong, there is a Greater Israel Project, and I think I'm one of the first to even talk about that in independent media, and I talked about it extensively. It's definitely real. Like, there are absolutely unhinged Zionists, and the Mossad are spying on the Americans, and everyone is really spying on everyone. Like, you have to put this into perspective, you shouldn't be surprised, for example, that maybe MI6 have spies in the White House. Yeah, everyone is spying on everyone. Like, that's just how intelligence works. So it's not, like, just Israel spying on the U.S., and everyone gathers dirt on everyone. Like, if you think the Epstein thing was the only one in a blackmail ring in the world, man, I guarantee you, French intelligence have their own version of it. British intelligence, everyone has their own version of that, which is obviously sickening. But it's just to show you that, you know, it's not just Israel spying on the US or, you know, collecting dirt on their politicians. You know, it's also the other way around, and it's happening globally. The thing that really convinces, that should convince anyone about who's running who, it's, you know, not just the economic side of it, but materially, Americans don't have to run to a bomb shelter every second the way Israelis do, right? So in that sense, and obviously we're not saying that Israelis are suffering compared to what they're doing and inflicting on others, right? Like, I'm not saying that to have any kind of sympathy, but as my point is, as long as Americans are not running to bomb shelters and the Israelis are running to bomb shelters for them or on their behalf, then for me, it's very clear who's benefiting from this relationship, if you want to call it that. And as long as American corporations are taking the lion's share of all these spoils, and that is the case, right? If you look at the gas that's being sucked out of Gaza now, that Chevron have just embarked on, it's Chevron, it's a US corporation that is taking the vast majority of the money from these deals. It's not an Israeli corporation. So, you know, at the end of the day, the center of gravity is very clearly Wall Street, not Washington, Wall Street. And, you know, I'm sure that Netanyahu even, like, personally and literally requests that the Mossad gather dirt on Trump and all this stuff. I'm sure. But I really, you have to consider that the Israelis have been asking the Americans for how many decades now to bomb Iran and go to war with Iran. Right. And... yeah, and they only did it, this war only happened properly once it was convenient for the United States to do so, because they had taken Venezuela, right? And they were ready to move on all of these projects that I outlined before in terms of the Turnberry deal with the EU and the gas pipeline in the Mediterranean. Because you have to remember, they had to take Syria first as well before they could literally bomb Iran, because they need to clear the path for the planes, but also to take the gas out of the Mediterranean. So... for me, all I'm seeing is that it was convenient for America, and that kind of just again proves the point that it's America running the show, it's the US running the show. Although, again, it's helpful to think of these actors as just corporations rather than people who represent countries, because I really genuinely think at the end of the day, they have no patriotism or sense of patriotism or a belonging, sense of belonging to one place or another. They're really just agents. Actors that represent corporations at the end of the day, because if that policy is dictating what the government and the army are doing, then it's abundantly clear who's in charge. And in terms of the nuclear deal, you know, I remember, so this is just over a year ago, year and a half ago, December 2024, yeah, around the time Syria fell. I was covering the nuclear talks here in Vienna, and, you know, Grossi went to visit the Iranians and they made a great offer to him. They basically said, we'll stop enriching 60% uranium. So, you know, we'll shut off all of the cascades and the centrifuges. And they said, we'll whitelist four new inspectors because they had blacklisted four of them. So they said basically we'll replace them, we'll allow new inspectors in. And, you know, obviously when they're telling this to Grossi, they're really telling it to Britain, France, Germany, and the US, right? Because they know that this is going to come up at the Board of Governors meeting. And of course, as expected, Grossi goes back to Vienna, and I've no doubt the Americans are obviously aware of this report and offer. And the Iranians, just to be clear, they even took Grossi to Natanz and showed him the centrifuges offline. So it wasn't just like something on paper that they made up. They literally showed him, look, we've turned these off. We'll do X, Y, Z. You know, what do you say? And they just proceed to condemn Iran at the Board of Governors meeting, which is a quarterly thing at the International Atomic Energy Agency. So my point with that is that Iran have tried so many times. Like, this is not the first, by the way, this is like the, you know, the 20th thing that I've seen throughout the 5 years I've covered it, where Iran are making, are trying to provide an off-ramp. They're trying to extend a hand and be diplomatic and find a solution. And the US and the West just, like, you know, blow them off, and then they proceed to condemn them at the Board of Governors. Like, you know, it's almost, you know, I you almost feel bad for Iran in the sense, like, why are you doing that to yourself? You know what I mean? Like, just screw these guys. They don't see reason. So I just want to say with that, to answer your question, that, you know, I've seen Iran extend an olive branch a million times and the US just, like, slap it out of their hands. So they really don't care about the nuclear issue. And it's Trump, by the way, who left the nuclear deal in the first place. And he even says in the speech in 2018 that it's about the missiles, right? About Iran's missile program. And it's about Iran's support for the resistance. That's really what he was upset about. Because if your only concern is nuclear material, Iran were following that deal, like, to the letter, really to the letter. They even followed it for an entire year after Trump pulled out as a gesture of goodwill. So, like, there's nothing that they haven't done. There's nothing they haven't done.
Yeah, and that entire time, they were begging the Europeans. They were saying, hey, the Americans don't have to be in this deal. Just don't put the sanctions back on us. Do business with us, and we'll stay in the deal with you, even with the American sanctions. And the Europeans said no to it. Richard, I really appreciate your time on the show today. Everybody, I can't recommend his documentary enough. I found it extremely compelling, and, you know, just another way to look at this conflict where, you know, the president's actions at least make a little more sense in having a coherent objective compared to, you know, what it looks like a lot of the time. Everybody, if you like this episode, be sure you like and subscribe to the channel and share it out there. Get out there to a few more people. Thank you.
Thank you, Kyle.
This episode sponsored by HealthyCell. HealthyCell is different than typical supplements because it's a gel, not pills. HealthyCell uses microgel technology, which is clinically proven to absorb 165% better than traditional pills. That means your body actually uses the nutrients, so you can feel the difference. And instead of swallowing a handful of vitamins, one great-tasting gel pack can replace up to 18 pills. Healthy cell formulas are created by physicians and nutritionists to support energy, focus, immune health, and overall wellness. If you're going to take vitamins, they should actually work. Healthy cell. Reach your potential.